Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to New Heights Educational Group radio show. My name is Kaden Behan, your host and a volunteer for New Heights. Before we begin our radio show for today, I have to announce some upcoming events. Recognition Day, Pool Party, and Potluck are July 6th, starting at 4 p.m. Oh, so that already passed, sorry. Graduation Day is August 3rd, from 11:30 to 12:30 p.m., the ceremony deadline to RSVP for homeschool and charter school families. Is June 3rd. Contact us directly if you would like to participate. You can contact us at newheightseducation@yahoo.com or 419-786-0247. Volunteers are also needed for this event as well, and you can contact us if you would like to help out. Today's topic is the emotional health and well-being of children and teens, specifically designed for parents who maybe our new parents or have very young children who are trying to best raise their children and provide a stable emotional environment and raise their children to be emotionally healthy adults and teenagers as well. So I just want to start by going through kind of a little bit of the topic of what changes you should expect for specifically young children. I've done a lot of research on teenage depression and suicide, and that's one of the major topics that I want to try to cover today. However, if we do run out of time, I definitely don't want to rush. I think that the topic deserves a great amount of dedication and time. So if we run out of time, I'll definitely cover that next show, which will be June 15th. So I got this information from PBS.org on information of how to raise young children and what to expect in their emotional development and their behaviors and how to react to these behaviors to the best of your ability. It takes a lot of patience combined with good judgment and warm, nurturing relationships to raise emotionally healthy children. But no matter what we do, children are going to feel sad, afraid, anxious, and angry from time to time. In this unit, our challenge is to learn how to help children cope with their feelings and express them in socially acceptable ways that don't harm others and are appropriate for the child's age and abilities. The first topic for our discussion is Erikson's stages of emotional development. Teachers can foster mental health in young children by providing many opportunities for healthy emotional attitudes to develop. Dr. Erik Erikson has made a significant contribution to our understanding of these basic attitudes. He believes that during the lifespan, a person passes through a series of stages of emotional development when basic attitudes are formed. Three of these stages are passed through in early childhood. These stages include trust versus mistrust, autonomy versus shame and doubt, and initiative versus guilt. In the stage of trust versus mistrust, the baby learns that other people can be depended on and that she or he can depend on herself or himself. This development of trust is deeply related to the quality of care. It is vital that the basic climate of the center encourages the establishment of trust between everyone who is part of that community. In our society, the attitudes of autonomy versus shame and doubt are formed during the same period in which toilet training takes place. This fundamental exercise in self-assertion and control is associated with the child's drive to become independent and to express this independence by making choices and decisions. Erikson says that children who are deprived of the opportunity to establish independence and autonomy may become oppressed with feelings of shame and self-doubt, which later result in losing self-esteem and being defiant. The desirable way to handle this strong need for choice and self-assertion is to provide an environment at home and in school that makes many opportunities available for the child to do for herself and himself and make decisions. In the stage of initiative versus guilt, around the age of 4 or 5, the child becomes more interested in reaching out to the world around him or her, doing things and being part of the group. At this stage, children want to think up things and try them out. They're interested in the effect of their actions and how their actions affect other people. They formulate concept of appropriate sex roles. They enjoy imaginative play, and they become avid seekers of information about the world around them. To feel emotionally satisfied, a child of this age must be allowed to explore, to act, and to do. The next topic of discussion is choices and limits. It takes a lot of patience to maintain limits when necessary and independence when that's possible. It's a balancing act of avoiding confrontations when you can and insisting on doing things your way when necessary and giving the child as many choices as possible. We just have to remind ourselves that this drive towards independence and self-assertion is an important stage of emotional development. There are many choices that can be offered, but remember, these are limited choices. Not, do you want to put on the sweater? But instead, which sweater? Not, do you want to have a snack? But instead, where do you want to sit for the snack? This way, self-selection of activities is such a valuable part of the preschool day. When children are expected to choose for themselves what they want to do, they have endless opportunities for decision-making. What happens when we create a climate that maximizes, that minimizes or takes away the chance for children to make decisions? In a spirited child, this can lead to struggle after struggle. In less spirited ones, it can produce feelings of inadequacy and loss of self-confidence. By allowing children to make their own choices and decisions and be responsible for their own outcomes, we are setting the framework for strong, emotionally healthy lives. But not everything is a choice. Sometimes the answer is no. Sometimes we have to wait for what we want, and sometimes we don't ever get what we want. Learning how to cope with disappointments, delays, and setbacks is also a critical part of development of a healthy, balanced mental attitude. By reducing the level and frequency of disappointments and frustrations can help avoid unnecessary battles, however. The next topic is feel what you want, control what you do. One of the most valuable skills we can teach our children is how to express strong emotions without hurting themselves, others, or damaging property. What we want our children to learn is feel what you want, but control what you do. Begin by communicating with the child in a non-judgmental way, showing her or him that you understand how they feel. Perhaps she is angry or sad because someone won't let her play, or perhaps she wants to do something so badly she can't wait another minute for it. Whatever the cause, the first thing to do is to put those feelings into words for her. Encourage the child to say the feelings out loud and then tell the other person how she feels. If the child's too young or inexperienced to know what to say, model a simple sentence for her to copy. Finally, do whatever else is necessary to resolve the situation. Of course, adults lose their temper and must learn to control their anger. The important thing to remember is that the same rule applies. Feel what you want, but control what you do. You can't fool children by denying you're upset or angry or frightened. It's better to simply admit it as calmly as possible. Hallmarks of emotional health. Now let's look at some signs of emotional health in children. First of all, is the child working on emotional tasks that are appropriate for his age or ability? For example, if he's 2.5, is he asserting himself from time to time? Is the child able to separate from her family without undue stress and form an attachment with at least one other adult at school? Of course, comfortable separation doesn't happen overnight, and it tends to be harder for younger children or children who are developmentally delayed. Another question to ask is the child learning to conform to routines at school without undue fuss? Keep in mind, a certain amount of testing, mostly by 4-year-olds and bulkiness, mostly by 2-year-olds, is to be expected. Is the child able to involve himself or herself into play? Play is not only the work of children, it is the greatest health promoter and vehicle for learning that's available to them. Can the child settle down and concentrate? Being able to focus attention on something that interests a younger child is an indicator that he or she is capable of learning. Finally, does the child have access to the full range of her feelings, and is she learning to deal with them at an age-appropriate way? This is one of the most important indicators of emotional health, because when the child is aware of all her feelings and can express them without harming herself or others, that child is developing an emotionally healthy way. When children seem to have special difficulties, we need to remember we don't have to solve every emotional problem by ourselves. When feeling puzzled, get some help. Talk to colleagues or to outside professionals and get the family involved, making certain they realize you aren't blaming them for the child's difficulties. So this, again, I got off of PBS.org, and I thought it was just a great introduction to what we're talking about today with emotional health and kind of how to best raise your children to be emotionally healthy adults and teenagers. So this information, just to sum up, was how to kind of what to expect by children from ages of around 2 to 4 or 5. This is definitely one of the areas of growth in which there are defining factors that were talked about, such as trust versus mistrust, autonomy versus shame and doubt, and initiative versus guilt, that can kind of guide parents to either make corrections to their parenting in order to have the positive outcomes of these different stages, such as trust, autonomy, initiative, instead of mistrust, shame, and doubt, and guilt, or to continue parenting the way they are so they see that the way that they're parenting is promoting these healthy habits in children. Additionally, I wanted to talk about more of what parents and families can do to increase the emotional stability of their children and to just provide a great emotional environment for children to feel safe and secure, to feel loved, and to just to grow without any sort of limitation. So I researched some information on this at emotionallyhealthychildren.org. It's a very interesting website, and I do strongly recommend it for parents who are interested in the emotional health of their children. It offers a lot of great information on how to better the emotional health of your children if you're interested. So I'm going to talk a little bit about family life, and the first topic is sense of community. Ideally, families would function as a team in the best tradition of the world. Ideally, families would function as a team in the best tradition of the word, and as in team effort, everyone pulls together for the good of the whole. Team play, or collective play with mutual assistance of the members. Teamwork, several associates doing a part, subordinating personal prominence to the efficiency of the whole. In practice, however, some families seem closer to another definition. The definition of team as two or more draft animals harnessed to the same vehicle. John Gardner, former U.S. Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare, once said, "The problem with many of our cities is that they're encampments of strangers and not communities. This is also a problem with many families. Too often in our modern, complex, fast-moving, high-tech societies, families do not always develop a sense of community. The children get lost in the rush. To create this sense of community, family members need to be involved with one another and do things together. Families that do things together create a camaraderie cohesion. Families that do things together that are fun and interesting create a positive atmosphere. Families that do things together that encourage members to think, ask questions, and express themselves become learning communities. Families that do things together on a regular basis create traditions. Families that create traditions develop a strong sense of community, displaying mutual respect, caring, and support. The children of families with a strong sense of community are more resistant to outside negative influences, more likely to be influenced by positive role models within the family, and to become emotionally healthy citizens at home, in school, and within society at large. Core values. The strength of the family emanates from parents and their convictions. If there is no coherent philosophy, strategy, or approach to child rearing, and if values are not clear, parent behavior is usually inconsistent and confusing. It behooves parents to define values for themselves and to emphasize them in the family through words and action. If we think of family values as values shared by all members of the family, it becomes something very much worth striving for. Adopting 5 critical needs as an integral component of a family's core values provides a valuable framework to guide parents' interactions with their children and to evaluate their parenting effectiveness. Additionally, it does much more. As parents treat each other in ways that satisfy the 5 needs, they become role models for the kids on how to act in a loving way. Further, as parents communicate to children that they have the same needs and express positive feelings about the children's behavior that satisfy these needs, they begin to become true family values. Children are stimulated to start thinking not only about what's being done and not done to, for, and with them, but also about how their behavior impacts others. Since the 5 needs are relevant to all interaction among the individuals, opportunities to apply them in everyday life are constant. Thus, with practice, the children's and parents' understanding, appreciation, and use of the concepts are certain to grow. Children can learn about the power of their behavior to impact each other and their parents, and also relatives, friends, teachers, acquaintances, and almost anyone whom they've had to contact. This helps strengthen a sense of community among family members and also gives children a larger view of community as a whole. Family meetings. The purpose of family meetings is to establish a concept of family as a learning community, in which mutual respect and cooperation are necessary for all family members to lead happy, healthy, secure lives. This concept contributes to satisfying the emotional needs of all family members and learning the valuable skills in communication, problem-solving, and decision-making. It is part of the ongoing process in which children participate actively in their own evolution on their way to becoming thinking, self-confident, independent, responsible, caring, and civic-minded adults. Approach to family meetings. Family meetings is a major activity for parents and children to assess how well they are doing individually and collectively, and to decide on ways to make things better. Through sharing feelings, information, and experiences, a sense of community is created. The types of family meetings: goal-oriented meetings. They can be periodic as needed, and this is where the family attempts to achieve consensus. For example, 1, to identify and assign family responsibilities or tasks. This can be established in an example such as a chore list. 2, establish family rules. 3, problem solving, identify and solve specific problems. 4, decision making, identify the need for and making decisions. 5, planning, to plan a family project, activity, or event. Another type of meeting is a feedback session, regularly scheduled, usually 1 time per week, and it's ongoing. Open-ended interactions among all family members as an outlet for expression of feelings, concerns, frustrations, appreciations, and joy in a safe, non-threatening atmosphere of open communication. Members can address the question, what do we see in each other, ourselves, doing that is helping or hindering us to lead happy, healthy lives? In answer to this question, items 3 and 4 below become the core activity of each session. Item 1, one highlight or lowlight of my week was, and then the family member will go on to say what that was. 2, one thing I did this week that I didn't like was, and one thing that I liked was. 3, feedback is addressed to a specific person. This would be an example of something you did that affected me or the family positively or negatively, or about which I have a question or concern. 4, something that is going on in my life that causes me concern, fear, and joy is. 5, something that bothers me or that I enjoy about our family life is. 6, a closing activity. Each member says one positive thing about each family member at the end of each meeting or periodically as desired. Next topic is family as a learning community. As parents and children become better students of their own behavior, they are able to help one another recognize when they are relating in emotionally healthy or unhealthy ways. This is the beginning of family as a learning community. As such, it is no longer business as usual with parents as paragons of knowledge and virtue to be passed on to their kids so that they can become just like their moms and dads. It recognizes that adults are not finished products, but rather adults in training, imperfect, fallible human beings. Family members understand that all of them need to learn how to become better persons, and that this learning can occur as a family, children from parents, parents from children, and all together. As part of this process, parents should consider having their teenagers, and where appropriate, preteens too, consider these options as presented in this article, situation by situation and game plan by game plan, and apply it to their daily lives. Such a discussion with its accompanying personal sharing could further their getting to know one another better as people and not just as roles as mother, father, and child. So this was quite an interesting article that I found at emotionallyhealthychildren.org. On the website, that there's a book available on how to raise emotionally healthy children. And I think it's definitely worth checking out if you're interested. This is just an excerpt from that book with some advice on how to create a sense of community within the family. And I think that a lot of the suggestions, such as having a family meeting, doing activities together, and especially what I found really important, not only from this article but as applied in my personal life, is not letting the roles of the family, such as the roles of the parents, become the stereotypes as being the all-knowing, incapable of making mistakes, or incapable of admitting those mistakes to the children, and the stereotype of the children being not necessarily always in the wrong, but always inexperienced and not able to contribute to the family in the same way that the parents are. I found that when children and parents work together to solve issues within the family and share opinions about different family conflicts or family projects or different things that have happened in the family life, that it really creates an environment in which both children and adults feel heard and respected. And I personally believe, from my experience, that it's helped truly connect parents to their children. I think that it enables children to get a more wholesome view of their parents, and to understand that their parents are not perfect, and to understand the reasons why they're not perfect. And I think this creates more of the ability to forgive your parents for being imperfect, because they're no longer the all-perfect, can-never-make-a-mistake ideological figure in the family anymore. Instead, they're human beings like the child, himself or herself, and they can more easily relate to the way the parent feels, and I think it just makes for better communication as a whole between parents and children. It solves a lot of conflicts. It solves a lot of issues with children feeling unheard or oppressed by their parents, and then that can cause issues later down the line with children not feeling like they can trust their parents or that their parents can understand them or resenting their parents. So I think that this site, emotionallyhealthychildren.org, is definitely worth looking into. It has great information and advice on how to create a more respectful, loving, and just open family life with children and adults, and helps solve a lot of conflicts that I know that a lot of families go through, that I think would benefit a lot from the things suggested in this article that I read. So we have a little bit of time left, but I don't want to go into the full topic of teenage depression and suicide, but I'm going to just read a little bit about it as an introduction, and we'll pick up on it next week. This information is from kidshealth.org. The tragedy of a young person dying because of overwhelming hopelessness or frustration is devastating to family, friends, and community. Parents, siblings, classmates, coaches, and neighbors might be left wondering if they could have done something to prevent that young person from turning to suicide. Learning more about the factors that might lead to adolescent suicide may help prevent further tragedies. Even though it is not always preventable, it is always a good idea to be informed and take action to help a troubled teenager. Little information about teen suicide. The reasons behind a teen's suicide or attempted suicide can be complex. Although suicide is relatively rare among children, the rate of suicides and suicide attempts increases tremendously during adolescence. This was one of the reasons why I wanted to discuss this, especially due to this next factor, that suicide is the third leading cause of death in adolescents and young adults from 15 to 24. And that's a huge, huge percentage of people of this age dying because of suicide. So it's definitely something that I really wanted to give my attention to and to talk about. If that means that we don't get to everything today, that's perfectly fine, but I definitely want to dedicate even a whole show on this because it is so important and it is such an issue among young adults during this age. I'm just going to read just a tiny bit more, and then I'll read this again at the introduction of the next show. As I said, suicide is the third leading cause of death for 15 to 20-year-olds, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, after accidents and homicide. It's also thought that at least 25 attempts are made for every completed teen suicide. The risk of suicide increases dramatically when kids and teens have access to firearms at home, and nearly 60% of all suicides in the United States are committed with a gun. That's why with any gun in your home, should be unloaded, locked, and kept out of reach of children and teens. Overdose using over-the-counter prescription and non-prescription medication is also a very common method for both attempting and completing suicide. It's important to monitor carefully all medications in your home. Also be aware that teens will trade different prescription medications at school and carry them or store them in their locker or backpack. Suicide rates differ between boys and girls. Girls think about and attempt suicide about twice as often as boys and tend to attempt suicide by overdosing on drugs or cutting themselves. Yet, boys die by suicide about four times as often as girls. Perhaps because they tend to use more lethal methods, such as firearms, hanging, or jumping from heights. The article continues more, but as you can see, it's a very, unfortunately, upsetting topic, but it is one that, as I said, because of such the high number of teenagers and young adults from the ages 15 to 24 die because of suicide or attempted suicide, it is definitely something that I think is important for parents to learn about and to consider so that as their children are growing up or if they have children in this age range, they can better be able to spot the, red flag and to hopefully help diminish the overwhelming statistic of people around this age that die from suicide. So, again, thank you for listening. I hope that this has been very informational for parents and children if you're listening. And I hope to continue this next week. And I hope that you will also tune in for the show. I think it's very important. And thank you guys for listening.
Shoulders, you raise me up.